Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Almeen. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
Welcome today to this hour we can share together, and I am on my own again today, so we don't have anyone to ask me questions, but I am armed and ready with the questions that you have sent through our email list, and a lot of the questions pertain to relationship, the changing face of relationships. What does this big planetary ascension that started in earnest in February of 2005 have to do with relationships? Has it changed? You know, can we expect something different in the future? Let's take a look at this. Now, firstly, my brothers and sisters, I just want to make something clear. The cosmos, and led by the Earth, has been on an upswing, literally, for millions of years. It's just that in February of 2005, it became so accelerated in ascending that it started actually to move by, I believe it was around about August of 2005, the Earth actually started to move its position in space. Space itself started to move. And although this has been obscured from our vision, the actual configuration of our stars changed. So, you know, we've discussed this very carefully, the issue of holograms, and I think we did that three shows or four shows ago. So the planetary ascension has in earnest changed life as we know it since February of 2005. In relationships, what does this mean? In relationships, scientists that study sociological anomalies and so on in sociology will tell you that there's normally a percentage of, say, homosexuality that is prevalent at any given time in a society. Our percentage has increased. Why? Well, because we have had a situation that has just recently changed. And the situation is like this. I have always said that the infinite and the reflection of the infinite is the cosmos, that the infinite is predominantly feminine. Hence, we call the infinite the mother. That is absolutely accurate until recently. That infinite being had far more feminine, I thought was the norm. I thought it was the reason that it was birthing. And so the feminine tasks, the feminine role had to be emphasized. This was birthing creations. But that is not accurate. It was imbalanced. Now, when we say something is imbalanced or imperfect in the cosmos, what it means is from our lower perception, that is the way we can describe it. It will ultimately reveal itself to have been perfection, but it might take us many layers of ascension to get to the place where this is the case, where we can actually see it. You know, so chaos is often just a higher order that somebody from a lower order cannot comprehend. So my brothers and sisters, in the cosmos, the feminine was far more prevalent. And the masculine itself did not have enough masculine in it. And we spoke on, I think it was about three shows ago, we spoke about the fact that there is an imbalance that when there's not enough masculine, destructiveness develops. Because the masculine task is to pull apart, to destructure. and then the all-encompassing regeneration is the feminine. If the destructuring becomes accentuated, it becomes destructive. I beg your pardon, hold 1 second. I'm hearing Mother say, I have it wrong. So excuse me. Mother is saying, Ishkiahma kukiya nash, espiki ohi inach, spa uva bishkla uva. She says, I stated it accurately, but my reasoning is wrong. She says that it isn't the masculine that destructures, it's the feminine that destructures. The masculine builds. Ishkukiyach namaasa, ushvikyo ono oshe, sahvasta bishpa kanavaish. It's because the feminine, which destructures, has been too prevalent, that the destructuring was more rapid than the building. And so it became destructiveness. So it is, in other words, accurate what I said, that there's, if there's not enough masculine, it becomes destructive. My reasoning was just wrong, and I'm very grateful Mother pointed that out, because every word I speak must be the truth as I see it this moment, my brothers and sisters. So, to continue. The excess feminine that we've had has made men not be able to find their own masculine. This is important because what it did is it created homosexuality. Homosexuality, even in dreams, is a symbol that you need to empower the same-sexness of yourself. In other words, a woman needs to empower her femininity, a man needs to empower his masculinity. And so this has damaged the masculine fields. They used to be called masculine grids when they were linear, but now they're fields that tells a male how to be. So men started to turn to other men to be able to find in them a mirror of what they couldn't find enough of within. So that is the first reason. That's one of the first things that happened in our interaction with others as a result of this. Secondly, the interaction between men and women, particularly as we started in these later years to ascend, men have been less assertive. Assertiveness is part of the masculine aspect, whether it's part of a woman or it's part of a male. But it's part of that aspect. And the assertiveness of men in relationships is something that women have often come to me, spoken about, and said, where are the men? We're expecting them to come forward. We're expecting them to tell us if they're interested, and they hang back, and it puts us into an assertive role, you know, and that's fine because those things can alternate. But it is the nature of the masculine to be assertive. But they haven't been able to find that masculinity within them to the degree that they should. Now, there's been another thing that has added to this. And that is that there was a role reversal between mother and father. It is the masculine's task to examine the details. It is actually the feminine task to design the large picture, the strategy. Which is why the feminine governs the large picture, the masculine administrates the smaller picture, because he's the detail, analytical, oriented being. Instead, this is fascinating, because as I've gone through the cosmos, I've noticed that this role reversal has been present, that where there's a feminine function, it's done by males. Where there's a masculine function, it's often done by females. And I wondered about that. That's because at the very core of it, it was done from this lower perception incorrectly. Mother went into the picture to do the details. Father held the big picture. The big picture, my brothers and sisters, is the more passive, receptive role. The small picture is the proactive masculine role. Mother was playing a masculine role. That has created more homosexuality, amongst other causes, in women, because the damaging of the masculine grid created ripples that went into the feminine as well. But so there's more homosexuality as women express the masculine, and men have become more passive. So even if they're heterosexual, that pattern has been there. This has recently been fixed. Mother is holding the bigger vision. Father is doing more of the details. So we'll talk a little bit more about this when we come back, and let's take a quick break.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
We have other factors that have also created ripples in our relationships. We had, of course, a backlash against the infantile state in which women traditionally have been kept in a few generations ago. So women have stepped out into the world, they've become independent, they've become self-reliant. This is part of the human race growing up, that's all. But it has confused roles. Because initially, anything that tended to put a woman in that role was greeted with a reaction, and a reactionary backlash when something has been suppressed, my brothers and sisters, is part of life. But right now, we're coming back to the middle range. Now, let's look at this issue of the middle range. Men and women have tended to view the middle range as safe, but it is anything but safe. By the middle range, I mean this. Men don't want to be too assertive because they might be viewed as being overly aggressive, or they don't want to be too outspoken. They don't want to come across as being a stalker or a creep or pushy. In addition, because of, you know, the huge increase we had in abuse, or perhaps it always has been there, but certainly it's more talked about now, this issue of sexual abuse, they know that when women have been sexually abused, you know, that overly assertiveness is going to disturb them, and they want to feel that things are safe and under control. So men have backed into the middle range where they're not very assertive, not very passive, they're just sort of in the middle. This is stagnation. Women, on the other hand, don't want to seem to be too vulnerable because they don't want men to walk over them. They've had enough of that. And they don't want to seem too assertive because there's some ugly names for women that are overly assertive. And so they, too, play ball. They try and conform. They stay in the safety of the middle range. The middle range, my brothers and sisters, is in fact stagnation. It is a half-life, And life will push and push and push our buttons, sometimes not too pleasantly, to get us out of a place where there's very little growth. And so what happens is that we are pushed until we finally get it, that all things are within us. Within each man, there's a soft and tender, vulnerable side. And within each woman, same. There's everything. There's the assertive side. There's the warrior. There's this. There's that. When we go into the extremes of our being, alternating those extremes, you know, sometimes going through the middle range, but from very assertive to very receptive to very assertive to very receptive, that is very important for dynamic life. This is the place of growth. Pulsating balance. And it doesn't mean that we're not receptive while we're assertive. But our assertiveness is dominant at that time. So if we can allow ourselves to go deeply into assertiveness, deeply into vulnerability, then we are starting to truly live again. And if men and women or homosexual partners pulse in this way, it brings dynamic life to their relationships. So this middle range as a range of safety is a tremendous misconception. And it makes sexuality and life between men and women lukewarm. My brothers and sisters, there is simply certain characteristics that are inherent in the feminine, whether it's the feminine within a woman or the feminine within a man, etc. The feminine is not direct in its approach. It is circular. So not only during sexuality can this be done. In other words, a male thrusts. A woman should not be thrusting the way that he does to meet his thrust during intercourse. She should, in fact, be undulating. In other words, her hips should be moving in a circle, not up and down in the thrusting. In this way, she actually pulls his energy into her. He is thrusting. When she circles her hips, the masculine energy comes in along with the penetration. It's her task to pull in the energetic levels. It's his task to insert the physical. If you understand what I'm saying, the approach with others also is more circular in the case of the feminine approach. Rogier, who is our producer for our video clips that we have on YouTube and iTunes, and you often hear him assisting me with these programs to be able to answer questions, he has a feminine circular approach when he speaks to me. I have a direct, more masculine approach. And so I have to acknowledge the validity that even though he's very masculine, he has a feminine approach of speaking and thinking. And I have to acknowledge that's the way it is. You cannot ask him to just get to the point. It's not his way. He's exploring the peripheral edge. I have to feel the point. It's very important to recognize these different approaches as we go through life. Because, for example, we call, and we've done quite a bit of writing on this in the book Journey to the Heart of God, the ones that have the feminine approach, it's a horizontal approach. And the horizontal approach is, they're called the dreamers. And ones that are working with the direct, to the point, linear thinking approach, they're called the stalkers. And my brothers and sisters, we have very frequently attracted dreamers into our life if we're stalkers, and vice versa. And because we bring benefits to one another. Example. The stalker is very highly organized. They're very linear. Their mind is like a filing cabinet. The dreamer to the stalker can seem very disorganized, but they bring in potential. They bring in new ways of being. Scientists have done some studies as to whether the democratic way of arriving at an end product, where everybody gives input, which is the feminine approach of the dreamer, or whether the stalker, who's the dictator, I'm the boss, you give me input, but then I decide, and here we go. What is the difference in the end result? Well, the stalker, in fact, will produce in that more autocratic way, much quicker result, possibly waste less of the taxpayers' money, but the end result will be far less imaginative and rich than the end result, which might take 3, 4, 5 times as long, of the democratic approach in which everybody's input is considered and worked into the final product. It will be more diverse, it will be more rich, and it will be a better end product, but it will take much longer. And, you know, if the stalker can prevent himself from pulling his hair out by then, well, then he will have learned a lot. So there is, it's necessary for us to take some time to listen to the dreamers with our hearts. You know, an example is that someone told me yesterday, you're not efficient. Well, I about, you know, had a knee-jerk reaction that about kicked myself in the face, because I thought to myself, okay, what is this person saying? Because I want to see someone else write 3 books at one time, you know, be able to do school projects, help their child memorize their times tables, maintain a family life, cook their own food and put food lunches away for a week at a time, and record 4 hours of radio and run my own office. That takes some efficiency. You know, the house has to be cleaned, dry cleaning has to be done, all of these things. Light bulbs needed to be replaced. This was my yesterday. So I want to see someone with more efficiency. But really, what they were saying is that I needed to ask Mother to put something in the book. Light workers have been running after people, trying to persuade them that they have something of worth to say. It needs to be written in the book of life that those people need to seek them out at the right level, at the right time, and that's how it's supposed to be. If we do that, you know, then one's books make profit. Right now, I spend about $100,000 on advertising, and our books make about $80,000, which means that somewhere else I have to earn that money, which is why I'm saying that right now I'm actually paying people to read my books. This is not the way it should be. If you're stirred by a book, you should be able to tell somebody, I'm stirred by this book. You should try and get it. It's the way that it spreads, word of mouth. People should seek out high truth. And this is what that person was saying. Because they're a dreamer, I couldn't take their words at face value. It would have been a big mistake. It's changed life. Because I listened with my heart and then took the insight to Mother to ask what to do with it. And she said, this needs to be written. So we'll look a little more about stalkers and dreamers after these messages.
Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity. evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
The world of mysticism has yet another reason to rejoice. Almeen has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
So let us take a look at how a husband and wife can live together if they were a stalker and a dreamer, and we were just, for argument's sake, make him the stalker and her the dreamer, though it can, of course, be other way around. So he would come home and have a very rough time at work. And he'll have a bad day, and he had heartburn all day long, and he walks in the door, and he says, Dear, you know those sandwiches you're making me with the tuna fish, I think you shouldn't send those to work with me. They give me heartburn. And she's busy cooking away. She's the dreamer. She's hardly hearing his words. She says, that's good, dear. She says, would you mind just taking a look at the toilet upstairs that's blocked? I can't seem to get it unblocked. And he's walking up there, and now his mood is starting to change, and he's thinking, what is the matter with this woman? I am telling her I'm having heartburn, and she's so unsympathetic, she sends me upstairs to look at the plugged toilet. What is the matter with her? Well, if he were paying attention to the fact that he cannot take her words as a dreamer, she's going to, at face value, because as a dreamer, she's picking up around the peripheral edges. She's picking up information that she herself doesn't understand. That's the value of having a stalker in one's life when you're a dreamer. They do the analysis. And so, if he were smart, he would say, what she's really telling me is it's not the filling of the sandwich. It's not the tuna fish. My plumbing is blocked. In other words, I'm not moving the food through properly, and usually that is that somebody is not drinking enough, they're not drinking enough water, or their diet is overbalanced into starches. So she's telling him, you need to drink more water, your plumbing is blocked. But she doesn't even know that that is what she is saying. So, you know, let's take another scenario. He decides, listen, I'm going to tell her why I had a bad time at work, because clearly she's not hearing me when I'm telling her I had a bad day. So I'm going to go and tell her. So he walks into the kitchen. She's still standing there cooking. And he says to her, honey, you know, something dreadful happened. I just can't believe it. My co-worker committed suicide last night. I feel so devastated, because if only he was able to talk to me, I could have helped him. If it was debt, I mean, I could have helped him arrange a consolidation of debt or a payment plan or something. I would have done anything. But he didn't talk to me, and it could have saved his life. What could I have done differently? So she says, oh, honey, that must be terrible for you, because dreamers are very empathic, and they really do feel sadness. That must be terrible for you. Honey, listen, I'm going to finish fixing dinner. I'm going to bring your dinner. I'll keep the kids quiet. Why don't you just take some quiet time up in the study? We'll close the door. I'll bring your dinner in there. just so you can unload and deal with this. So he thinks, oh, finally, you know, and she's really understanding. Then as he walks out the door to go to his study, she says, by the way, honey, you really at some time ought to call your brother-in-law. And he's thinking again, you know, is this really the time to tell me this? Why must I worry about social calls when she just told me to just take time and feel my grief? But what she was really telling him is that the brother-in-law, and see, she doesn't know this. She doesn't really know what she's saying because the analytical skills is not a very good part of her being. So she's really telling him, listen, your brother-in-law is also going to commit suicide. But if you can talk to him, it won't happen. In this way, dreamers and stalkers can be a marvelous combination. But my brothers and sisters, they really do need to know how to work with one another. See, let me give you an example of what's confusing to them in relationship. In the feminine approach, whether it's male or female, the dreamer will emote over something that's wrong. So the stalker will try and fix it. Because they don't want this dreamer to be sad. They love this dreamer. So they can fix it. So they immediately start to develop a strategy. And but the dreamer gets more and more nebulous and all over the board and round in circles. And the man is going, what, or the stalker is going, what is she talking about? We'll just pretend it's still the same couple of husband and wife. What is she talking about? I can't fix all of this. Let's fix one thing at a time. So he says to her, listen, honey, just let's focus on this part. But no, she's now crying really loudly. She's all over the board. She's emoting. He doesn't know what to do because his attempt to create a strategy for her to fix these things that are bothering her like this, it's not working. So finally, you know, he says, listen, I'm just going to shut down. So he just shuts down. He goes inside because he's getting upset, but he doesn't like to be upset if he can't control what's upsetting him. So he shuts down. He goes inside. Now she tells him he's absolutely not hearing her, and he isn't valuing the process. This is important because the value of the process for dreamers is vitally important. I have a student that's very high up in the military, and she can't stand it. When there's a meeting to discuss something, everybody first has to party, and how's your wife, how's that new baby, let me see the picture of your new puppy, and, you know, at tea time is every half an hour, they want to have a little break, they want to think things over, and she just wants to get to the point. The dreamers value the journey, the process, more than the end results. Stalkers focus on the end results. She finds it totally insensitive of him to try and fix things when he's just supposed to hold her and say, it's okay, honey, we don't have to fix anything right now. You just go ahead and cry. You just emote all you want. I'm right here. It's all right. We all know it's going to pass. And when you're no longer so sad, we'll find a way to fix it. But if he fixes it too soon, she feels denied the release of her tears. Very important issue. Secondly, if he shuts down, now she feels unheard. So he speaks to her. He's trying to explain to her something that's not working in the relationship. And he has to put a lot of forethought in this because he doesn't want to make her unhappy. He doesn't want to have any kind of a argument. He just wants to make sure that he gets his point across. So he puts a lot of effort into it. So he sits down and he's saying, I'd like to speak to you about things that make me unhappy around such and such. Yes, dear, I'd love to listen. Okay, so he says, this is my premise. This is my conclusion. Here are the points in between. Bang, 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 bang. You know, after point one, she gets a very glazed look her eyes. He's lost her completely. Now he's going, what is the point of speaking to her? She doesn't hear me. I am therefore not important to her. And remember, she valued her grief as not important to him, and he's not hearing her. See how the communication breakdown happens. But what happens is that stalkers can juggle 12 points at once, 12 jobs at once, 3 books at once, whatever it is, they can juggle that much if they have to. 6 radio stations at once. They can juggle them all. Dreamers can't. But dreamers will pick up about 10 things for every 2. The stalker picks up in the subtle realms. They'll walk into a room. They'll feel there's an icky feeling in that corner where there's jealousy over Susie's dress. They'll feel over here somebody is shy, embarrassed, and awkward. They'll know that somebody over here is appraising them not in a very kind way. All of that at once. So things put them into an overload very quickly. And the husband will say, honey, wasn't that a great party? And she'll go, oh, it was dreadful. And he thinks that she's out in la-la land because she seemed to be enjoying herself all evening. People were pleasant. Food was good. What more can you ask for? There were even some good jokes. See, all he's looking at is the surface. So she is inundated with information. And now he's firing at her like a machine gun. This, that. He lost her after the second point. So he has to go much, much, much slower. And if he goes slower like that, oftentimes the way to do it is to use allegory, parables, examples, to go back and forth with a little discussion over each point before he goes to the next point. Now, it's true when the discussion happens, she's going to try and veer off course, but he has to keep bringing her back to that point. But that's the only way that she can assimilate it. In my classes, people get a glazed look over their eyes after the first few points, if they're dreamers. And so I have learned over the last year particularly that I must slow the class time down. And I do it by making huge gaps of time in the day where they can ask me anything, from why birds migrate to why they have chilblains to why their husband is alcoholic, anything. You know, why is the cosmos this way or that way? Anything. But it slows it down and it makes them feel heard, and then they don't get this feeling of overwhelm if they are in fact dreamers. So stalkers help organize the life for dreamers. And dreamers help bring the intuitive, new potential, and unthought of things to the stalker if he listens with his heart. So we'll be back right after this and we'll discuss how to truly listen and how warriorship has changed from masculine to feminine warriorship.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almeen experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. but as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Almin's life was dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We can see that even for employers, this is a very large issue because they have stalkers amongst their employees. They also have dreamers. And often, those that rise to leadership positions end up, very unfortunately, being stalkers. Because our system is not designed to totally use the wonderful gifts that the dreamers bring. The feminine-oriented relationships, way of looking at life, because of the fact that our school system is very cerebral, left-brain-oriented, very stalker-oriented. So when a dreamer is dealing with a stalker boss, the stalker boss will say, go home, here's a thick manual, by tomorrow morning, please give me a summary of what is in this manual. For the dreamer, who is used to not being a good achiever as branded by the world, that's an impossibility. They will look at that boss like they're nuts and say, it's going to take me a week to read this manual and come up with some points. They are totally into making sure they understand every detail because they're not used to the details. They work with the big picture, so they overcompensate for it. And so, my brothers and sisters, there are some tools and techniques that I recommend when I see that somebody has difficulty in relationship and they are a dreamer, and it goes this way. I recommend that they take a course in speed reading. When they go in there, they might be reading 200 words a minute. And if they can do it well, if they just relax and trust that aspect of themselves, they can go up to about 1,000 words a minute. So if they do this 1,000 words a minute speed reading, they can speed read things like that. Secondly, I tell them to develop a shorthand with themselves. See, because dreamers get damaged from our school systems, they don't want to miss a thing because they are traditionally aware that they're missing a lot. Well, they're missing a lot in the physical. They're just not missing it in the etheric, and it's not being tested in the etheric. Our systems deal with the physical. So they will take laborious, detailed notes to try and compensate for this, but then they can't keep up with a machine gun blast of information coming from the boss. So I recommend that they somehow or another make for themselves a type of shorthand. And, you know, even if they put three words in the sentence, as long as they know the sentence, here's a full stop, there's the three words, they can fill the gaps in afterwards. Then the other thing that I invite them to do is to make absolutely sure that they say things back to the boss. Like, for instance, if they summarize, they make a summary. And this is important because it's hard for a dreamer to see the crux of the matter because they're seeing everything. So I ask them to summarize it and to give the key points of what needs to be done and by when. To take it back to their boss to say, I'm sorry to bother you. Could you glance over this one page? I want to make absolutely sure I understand what you say. To have the boss critique the summary, and then they go back, and to the best of their ability, they do it. This is the coping mechanisms needed for a dreamer to thrive in a stalker's world. Stalkers have a big problem as bosses. They cannot understand why they give the most detailed, explicit instructions, then come back 2 weeks later to the same employee and nothing's been done, or everything's been done incorrectly. That's because they didn't understand that by the second point, they were tuned out. I have seen this so many times. The glazed look comes over the employee's eyes. She doesn't even hear what I say. And I'm standing there saying, why am I saying this? They feel completely unheard. And they feel like they have to put all these safety mechanisms in place because whatever they say is just not going to be done anyway. It makes them feel very unhappy about their task of overseeing a workforce. So my brothers and sisters, stalkers need to make sure that everything is slowed down. And one of the ways is questioning back and forth. For instance, they make point number one, instead of just going point two, point three, point four, they take more time. It saves time down the road. So they discuss it in the following way. They say, I'd like everybody's opinion about what I just said. I'm going to give you a few minutes to think it over. So you just give them a few minutes. You perhaps repeat what you say. I give you a few minutes to think it over. I'd like everybody's opinion. Then they question, what about you? What is your opinion? And how about you? What do you think of this? They create a safe environment where there's just opinions given, but it will give the boss the clue as to whether or not the words are understood. And don't just get the opinions of those that are the linear thinkers amongst your staff. And so when they speak to you, it's sometimes like Greek to a stalker, what a dreamer is trying to say. Feel it with their heart. Analyze a bit. Say, I don't quite understand what you mean by these words. Ask and ask and ask questions until you think you've got it. And then say, are you saying this? And then you mirror back to them what you think they said. This is the only way that that communication can help, can be helped between those two completely diverse worldviews. Now, there's another very important key thing that gets into metaphysics. My brothers and sisters, true hearing is assimilation. It's not hearing with the ears. An assimilation of another's thoughts as a form of hearing can only take place in the absence of internal dialogue. If you are still having internal dialogue, you need to put yourself in a semi-meditative state if you truly want to hear another speak to you. In that semi-meditative state, which is a practice that can easily be developed, think of your consciousness as a spider web of light going clear across the cosmos. When you are fully in the moment, focusing on physical only, you're in the middle of that spider web. To go out one layer on the spider web is where you are in meditation. To go out all the way and live there is, in fact, God consciousness and mastery. But if you can learn to go out and in and out and in, semi-meditative state, fully into the moment, semi-meditative fully, if you can do that, which takes some practice, but it's very doable. When someone is speaking to you, instead of taking their words at total face value, which is not listening at all, if you go somewhat out on your spider web in a slightly meditative state, no thought in your mind, you go into their head and see through their eyes. The words hardly matter because words by their very nature deceive. They make us think we know. We cannot possibly know what another means by a specific word because they bring their entire life's experiences to that word. So to look through their eyes is true listening, and that is called assimilation. So developing this skill in business negotiations and where there's a lot at stake, you know, with others that you're going into some sort of a union with, listen, look through their eyes and feel what they're saying with your heart. That is the ring of truth. You're sounding it out with your heart. Now, my brothers and sisters, let us take another look at why relationships have been changing during the ascension. I cannot even hope in 10, well, maybe I can catch you up in 5 years. If I were to every day speak to you, it would take me 5 years to catch up and explain the work that Mother does every day since this ascension began in February of 2005. Every single day, the lives of individuals, not just on Earth, but throughout the cosmos, have changed. Dysfunctionality is the result of unwholeness within. The unwholeness within has been repaired more and more and more. If it is repaired, dysfunctionality also is going to decrease. Many of our relationships have been held together through dysfunctional means. Example, disrespect is shown from one partner to the other. If that partner doesn't want to leave because of financial reasons or not wanting to see their partner fully because it will push them into a crisis in which they have to deal with it, so they want to have that blind spot, they're going to make excuses for it. They're going to say, oh, shucks, it's because of their rough childhood. Oh, my goodness, it's because their father spoke to their mother that way. My brothers and sisters, to excuse in others behaviors that is non-life enhancing is dysfunctional. And it is cowardice on our part not to deal with it as it needs to be. Now, let's say you try and speak to that other partner, but the point is they're a rager. So they rage and rage and rage. So you sit down and you write it. And you say, look, your coping mechanism of avoiding change is to rage. It throws up an immediate wall. You can't hear me. You're on the defensive. There is no right and wrong, but what there is a validity of feelings. Nobody's right, nobody is wrong, but our feelings need to be considered as valid. If they're not valid and there's a perception flaw, please point it out. I have nothing to prove and everything to learn, and I'm prepared to change myself, not just sit back and wish for change. So, then you say, when you do this, I feel this. And propose an alternative. It is toxic to live in the same environment with a rager. They need to go for anger management, a course somewhere, or counseling, or they need to develop their own skill sets for anger management. When the anger starts coming up, go to the bathroom. Stay in there for 10 minutes. Have a book of jokes next to the toilet. Wash your hands. Take time with the water and the soap. And then walk back in and now address the issue. A coping mechanism. So go for a walk. Go for a bike ride. Then address the issue. Just give the time out sign and nobody expects you to answer till you have your temper under control. But something needs to change, not just wishful thinking that somebody is going to change. And so, you know, you need to say, if you do this, I feel this. And you need to propose possible solutions. Tell them you just, you know, whatever solutions you're proposing, you would love to hear theirs. But there needs to be a solution. If you've done this a few times and there's no cooperation, my brothers and sisters, you need to seriously consider safeguarding those tender parts of yourself, like your inner child and your inner sage. Because as we've pointed out, accepting the unacceptable is not saintly, it is dysfunctional. I would also like to point out that the role reversal happened within the subpersonalities in the following way. As the poles in the cosmos shifted in August of 2006, warriorship used to be a warriorship against illusion. The entire Toltec way was designed for that, as we describe in the Ring of Truth. However, now it has become an inner warriorship. And the reason for that is that the purpose of life has changed from changing the illusion out there to understanding within. It has changed to expressing that which the infinite is in the most beautiful, glorious way that we can possibly think of in our own life. And when we do that, we are living our highest truth. So to do that is no longer an external battle. It is an internal accomplishment. So warriorship has become an internal warriorship. It guards the sanctity of the holy essence of our being. It guards the inner child. It guards ourselves from disempowering thoughts. And most of all, it takes full responsibility for the mirrors in our environment. It does not try and change them without. It tries to change them within. My beloved brothers and sisters, it has been a wonderful hour with you. Thank you so much, and until next time.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Almeen. Please join us again next week.